Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chagiga Daf Yud. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you'll find seven lines from the top of Daf Yud. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, where we've written Tchumim shel halacha, different areas of halacha, chelik mehen beli harbe bisus bamikra, vechelik mehen yesh. Some of these areas have very little scriptural support, and other areas have a lot of scripture dedicated to them. So we now turn to the Mishnah. We've broken the Mishnah down into three sections, but each section has a number of examples. Heter nidorim porchin ba'avir v'ein lohem al ma shiyismechu. Nidorim are vows that a person takes. Heter nidorim is the absolution of the vows by turning to a sage, a Talmud Chacham, who is empowered to absolve a person of his vows. So the Mishnah is telling us that this institution of a Chacham, of a sage, a scholar, being matir, absolving a person of his vows, there's very little hint in the psukim, and as far as scriptural support, there's practically nothing, but rather through the oral tradition we know of its existence. Hilchos Shabbos, Chagigos Vame'ilos, the laws concerning Shabbos, the laws concerning holiday offerings, laws concerning Me'ilos is the misuse of sanctified property, sanctified funds. Harehem karorim hatluyim b'sayro. They're like mountains that are suspended by a hair. Shehein mikro muat. There is little by way of psukim. Valochas merubos, and many halochas that apply to each one of the areas. Hadinin, judicial law, financial law, monetary matters, vohavodos, service in the Beis Hamikdash, sacrificial laws, hataros, laws regarding purity, vatameos, and defilement, varayas, and forbidden relations, yesh lohen al mash yismechu. There are many scriptures that refer to these topics, vehein hein gufei Torah, and they are the heart, the body of Torah. Rashi points out that the Gemara will ask, what do you mean that these represent the body of the Torah and not other things? Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading combined with a structural note where a trapezoid or volcano shape is featured. We indicate here, Rishima shel Tanoim, list of Tanaic opinions, Benigud leMishnah, in contrast to the Mishnah, Shesovrim, Sheyesh lohem leHeter Nidorim Alma lismoch, that Heter Nidorim, absolution of vows through the intervention of a sage, according to these opinions, has a scriptural basis, contrary to what our Mishnah indicated. And you'll see that as we go through this Tanaic source and Shmuel, who follows afterwards, we see a dashed underlining to emphasize the expression Yesh Lohem Almash Yismuchl, in contrast to the Mishnah that said otherwise. Tanya, Rebbe Eliezer Omer, Yesh Lohem Almash Yismuchl. Heter Nidorim has what to be based on. Shenemar, the Posuk says, ki yafli shtei pa'omim. Yafli has to do with articulating, with speech. So the Torah mentions speech in the context of vows on two occasions. One, in the case of Erechin, which has to do with a financial type donation to the temple, which is in general terms comes under the broad realm of vows. You vow to give, to dedicate, to donate such and such amount. And the other topic is Nazir, where you see Yafli. Nazirus is a vow whereby someone vows to abstain from vine products, and as a result also he has restrictions regarding defilement to the dead. So you see Ki Yafli twice in the Torah, and Rabbi Eliezer says Achas Haflo LeIsur VeAchas Haflo LeHeter. One is Haflo, which means articulating and specifying something, which LeIsur means which binds you, restricts you, as is the case in vow taking, and the other is an articulation that you specify in front of a sage that you had taken a vow, but not assuming certain circumstances that now make the vow difficult to continue observing. And through that articulation, you are achieving heter, the absolution, the undoing, the allowance of the matter. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Yesh Lohem Al Ma Shiyismechu. Heter Nidorim has what to be based on, Shinemar. There is a pasuk that says, Asher Nishbati Biapi. The Almighty says, I vowed in wrath. Biapi Nishbati V'chazarti Bi. It was a vow, but under wrathful circumstances, and I now retract that. Rashi says, Nishbati Biapi, in the lower part of the narrow lines, Rashi says, Midukomar Biapi, from the fact that that word is added, Mashma Yochol Ani Lishol Alav. The word api indicates wrath, which gives us the impression that it can be rescinded. The fi shemachmas api velo midas miyushevus nishbati. I vowed, but in a state of wrath, not in a state of equanimity. Yesh lemod mikan shamotzi pesach lejitro. From here we learn that one who can find an opening for undoing the vow, leimor, to say lo ledas kein nodarti she yikreini davar zeh ani ro'eh shani ro'eh bali ayidei nidri. Or a person says, when I vowed, I didn't vow thinking that such and such would happen to me. Matirilo, if he can say that, so then that would be grounds for undoing it. And all of this is alluded to in this pasuk, and specifically in the word be'api. We continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Yitzchok Omer, Yesh lohem alma shi yismuchu, heter nidorim has what to base itself on, shenemar, kol nediv libo. And Rashi explains, kol nediv libo, im odenu libo nodvo olov, if his heart still is desirous of that, yoviu, then he brings whatever he vowed to bring. Ve'im mischore, yotirulo, and if he has regrets, so then it can be rescinded. The vow can be undone. And the next opinion, Rabbi Chananya ben Achi Rabbi Yeshua Omer, yesh lamal ma shiyismechu shenemar nishbati v'akaymo lishmor mishpatei tzidkecho. The Rashi explains, nishbati v'akaymo lishmor mishpatei tzidkecho, which in which a person says, I vowed to fulfill your teachings, midikaomar v'akaymo, from the fact that the pasuk says, and I will fulfill it, mechlal diimrotza shelo likayim matirino, gives one the impression that if he should so desire not to fulfill, he can also to choose that track of non-fulfillment through absolution. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel I Havoi Hasam. Rav Yehuda quoting Shmuel says, if I was there amongst those Tanoim, Shmuel was a later authority, later than the Tanoim, and he says, if I was there, Amri Lahu Didi Adifa Miditchu, I would have told them that my source is better than your source. Shenemar, the pasuk says in the context of vows, it says Lo Yachel Dvoro, that you, the vow taker, shall not violate, transgress your words. And we infer Hu Eino Mochel, the person, the vow taker himself, does not undo the vow. Avol Achirim Mochalin Lo, but others can rescind it. So through the inference that's implied by this pasuk, we can conclude that others can rescind the vow, can absolve him from his vowed obligations. And now, as we go on in the Gemara, you notice we have a long point. And in the Gemara text, you also notice a number of triangles. So on the side, we have a mivne, a structural note. Pirchos, these are challenges or the undoing of lemakoros, leheter nedorim she nosnu hatanoyim. We had a framed section above that was a number of Tanaic opinions introduced with a volcano shape, each one giving a scriptural source for heter nedorim. In the triangles, we will basically undo each source by saying that the psukim that they were citing are to be understood differently. Now, if you look just simply at the markings, you'll notice you have four triangles. Those correspond to the four volcano shapes. However, we had an additional shape, a dashed volcano shape, Shmuel. He's not a Tano. And ironically, or interestingly, his opinion, as he claimed, was the best. And as his source was the best, in so far as that it doesn't have a pircha to it. So that's why we'll see only four triangles that correspond to the four Tanaic opinions, leaving Shmuel's source as reliable. So now we begin our point. Omar Rava, Lekulu Islu Pircha, Labar, Midishmuel, Deles, Le Pircha. They all have a challenge to them, an undoing, and with the exception of Shmuel, that doesn't have that. The E, Midr Rabbi Eliezer, had I had Rabbi Eliezer as the source, Dilmo, Kidr Rabbi Yehuda, Shomar, Mishum, Rabbi Tarfon. Maybe the expression, Ki Yafli, or the we'll say the second expression, the seeming extra expression of Ki Yafli, is needed for an alternative teaching, for a different teaching. So that the extra kiafli is needed for the following. The Sanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rabbi Tarfon, Le'olam Ein Echod Mehem Nozir, Shelo Nitno Nzirus Elo Laflon. Now this source is rather vague, or it's rather brief. So Rashi, though, gives the background to it. And Rashi describes two people that were sitting, and they were challenging each other, you might say. And they said, one of them said, I will accept Nazirite ship upon me. I'll be a Nozir if the fellow that is coming toward us, or some gentleman coming from the distance, and the speaker said, I'll be a Nozir if that guy is a Nozir. And the fellow sitting next to him said, well, I'll be a Nozir if that guy is not a Nozir. Now, one of them is going to turn out to be correct. However, neither one will become a Nazir. And the reason for that is that Nazirite-ship is incurred only if the initial speech was one of certainty, not one of doubt, not one dependent on circumstances to be revealed later on. So in this case, these two fellows that were sitting there, at the time they spoke, neither one knew the status of that fellow coming from the distance. So neither one was speaking from a position of certainty. Hence, neither one is a Nozir. And that is a result of the words Ki Yafli. The Torah says that when you take upon yourself Nazirus, it has to be in a Yafli fashion. Speech with certainty, not conditional. The Gemara then continues, after showing that Rabbi Eliezer's source, that the extra Yafli was a Yafli leheter, not so. The extra Yafli is to convey Rabbi Tarfon's teaching. E midi Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua had cited the Posuk Asher Nishbati V'Yapi, Dilma, maybe, Hachi Ka'omar. Maybe the spirit of the Pasuk, the meaning is as follows, Be'api Nishbati, I swore in wrath, V'lo Hadar Nabi, and I don't retract. E midi Rabbi Yitzchok Dilma. Maybe if you say Rabbi Yitzchok, if you cite his source of Kol Nediv Libo Dilma Lafuki midi Shmuel, maybe the pasuk is coming to teach to the contrary of what Shmuel holds. Yomar Shmuel Gomar Libo Yitzchok Shiotzi Bisfosov. Shmuel says that if a person decides to vow or to sanctify something, he is not bound unless he verbalizes his intention. V'chol kol mashmalon, and this posuk of kol nediv libo comes to tell me the afagav de lo hotzi b'svasav, that a person will be bound to the vow or the sanctification that he intended to make, even if he doesn't verbalize it. If his was to be the source of, namely Nishbati v'kaim lishmo mishbeit zikecha, Dilma, maybe the role of that pasuk is not to tell me, not to serve as a source for heter nidorim, but rather Dilma kirav gidul amarav. Maybe it's for his teaching. Yomar of gidul amarav minayin shenishboyin l'kaim es hamitzvah. From where do we know that it's conducive, or it's a positive thing that a person should swear to fulfill doing a mitzvah, by swearing to fulfill a mitzvah that will serve as an incentive for him to actually fulfill the mitzvah. So from where do we know that that is a legitimate practice? Minayin shenishboyin l'kayim es hamitzvah, shenemar nishbati v'kayimo lishmor mishpatei tzidkecha. So the posuk of nishbati v'kayimo doesn't serve as a source for heter nedorim, that the word v'kayimo means that there's an alternative of not being mekayim, namely through heter nedorim, but rather the posuk is showing that it's a positive thing to swear to fulfill a mitzvah, that thereby serving as a strong incentive for the individual to fulfill the mitzvah. Elo deShmuel less le pircha, but Shmuel's source doesn't have an undoing. Shmuel's source of lo yachel devoro, from which we inferred the vower, the one who swore, should not violate his words, but through someone else they can be absolved. That's a reliable scriptural hint or reference point for heter nedorim. Omar Rava v'itema Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok. Rava, and some versions have Rav Nachman Yitzchok saying, "Hainu diamri inchi." It's this phenomenon of Shmuel, who was a lesser figure than the Tanoim that preceded him, but yet people say, "Tova chada pilpata charifta mimoli tzona dekori." Better or stronger is one sharp pepper than a basketful of kori. Kori being some type of large vegetation, if you want for image purposes, than a basketful of melons or pumpkins. So that the one sharp but though small item has more strength than a basketful of large items. And that's Shmuel and his source versus the sources suggested by the Tanoim. Hilchis Shabbos. Our Mishnah said regarding Hilchis Shabbos, mikra muat, very little scriptural basis. The Gemara reacts with wonderment. Michtav ksivan. There are many psukim in the Torah warning against violating the Shabbos. What do you mean in the Mishnah when you say mikra muat? Loi tzricha l'chad Rabbi Abba. The idea of mikra muat, meaning that there's there's very little by way of even a hint to the issue of Shabbos, concerns the following aspect of Shabbos. Rabbi Abba's teaching, ha-choyfer gumo b'Shabbos ve'in tzorach elo li'afro. A person who digs a guma, a hole, or digs a pit on Shabbos, There are 39 forbidden activities on Shabbos, and one of them is boina, construction. In constructing a building, it's necessary to dig a foundation. So one has to dig pits in order to set in the girders and whatever other construction material is necessary. So in digging a pit for construction purposes, that's a Shabbos violation of boina. However, let us imagine someone who digs a pit because he needs the dirt from the pit. He doesn't need the pit itself. He would, in fact, prefer not having to dig to get the dirt, but he needs the dirt for whatever purpose. Someone who does that, who digs a pit on Shabbos for the purpose of the dirt, is considered exempt. Poter olel. He's not considered in violation of the melacha of boneh, the primary prohibited activity of Shabbos of construction. He's not doing an act of construction. The Gemara asks, this teaching of, so before we go on though, that point that you can, even though you go through the motions of a malacha, but your intention is not for its designed purpose, that does not constitute a Torah level Shabbos violation. So now that idea, you don't see psukim that teach us that. And it's regarding that the Mishnah says that Hilchos Shabbos is Mikra Mu'at. The Gemara asks, this teaching of Rabbi Abba, Keman, Ke Rabbi Shimon, is this in accordance with a solitary Tanaic opinion, that of Rabbi Shimon, D'yomar Melocha Sheino Tzricho Legufa Potter Aleo? In other words, that this is an idea that only Rabbi Shimon would subscribe to, but his adversary in Hilchos Shabbos, namely Rabbi Yehuda, would not agree with this. And it is Rabbi Shimon, of course, that says Melacha Sheino Tzricho Legufa, Shabbos activity, a Shabbos constructive activity, that is not needed for its originally designed purpose. It's a Melacha, but it's Eino Tzricho Legufa. Rashi adds another dimension of understanding. Four lines from the bottom, Rashi says, "Sheino tzricho legufa kagon melacha zos, sheino tzorach lebinyan zeh." This action that he's doing, he's not doing it for construction purposes. Rabbi Shimon Omar milsei. Rabbi Shimon said this principle of melacha sheino tzricho, not in the context of chofer guma veino tzorach afra, but he said it gabi moitzias hameis b'mito lekovro b'shabbos. A person carries out a corpse from a private domain into a public domain for the purpose of it being buried somewhere on Shabbos. The Ka'omer Rabbi Shimon Potter Al Hotzah Zu. Rabbi Shimon says that the transfer of the corpse from the private domain to the public domain is not culpable of the Shabbos prohibition of Hotzah. Hotzah means transferring an item from one type of domain to another, from a private domain to a public domain. In general, Hotzah, of course, is Isur Doraisa on Shabbos. It's forbidden from the Torah to transfer items from one domain to another, to carry things, to transfer the location of things. However, in this case, he carried the body from a private domain to a public domain. He's not chayav. Why not? Shebirut soynu lohoysa boi lov, v'lohoyot tzorach lo. The individual would have preferred not having to need to do this in the first place. He would have preferred not having a corpse lying in his house, so that his carrying out is not the fulfillment of his desire to transfer the item from one domain to another when it's done under circumstances that he would have preferred not having to need this in the first place. So the principle of Melacha Shein Tzricho Legufa, the Gemara is asking, is a principle that Rabbi Shimon advanced in the and we see in the context of carrying the body out and we can possibly say that it's not that this person's interest is that the body is transferred from place A to place B. His interest simply is that it doesn't, that the body doesn't remain, he doesn't want it in the original location. It's not that he's interested in it per se being in that second location. And as Rashi says, he would have preferred not having to need this in the first place. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, disagrees. And he says, even if those are the circumstances, you still are guilty. So are we to conclude that Rabbi Abba, who said a, say, a similar halacha, digging the pit because he needed the dirt, is that only something, and being exempt as far as Shabbos violation, is that something only Rabbi Shimon would subscribe to and not Rabbi Yehuda? The Gemara responds, Afilu Tamar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Abba's teaching concerning the digging of the pit can conform to Rabbi Yehuda as well. Hosam Mesakein. There, in the case of the carrying out of the corpse, he's doing something that's of a, we'll say, a non-destructive nature. It's a constructive act. But Hocha, here, in the case of the digging of the pit, Mekalkilu, he's ruining the chotzer, the courtyard, or the ground in which the pit is being dug. In other words, beforehand they had nice flat ground, and now there's a pit in the ground. And it's a pit that he's not going to be using for construction purposes. He dug the pit only to get the dirt out. So you're leaving you're doing an act which is essentially destructive in nature, and acts like that do not constitute a Shabbos violation, of course, on a Torah level. Rabbinically speaking, that's another story. There's still a prohibition. But on a Torah level, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that Rabbi Abba's case of Chofer Guma, the Shabbos and Sochel Afro, is Mekalkel, and hence it's not considered a Shabbos violation. So that at the end of the day, what you see here is you have a Machlokis, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, on a Tanaic level regarding Melocha Shein Tzricho L'Gufa. And we saw an example of Motzias Hameis, any action which is not destructive in nature and was done for a purpose other than its primary design purpose. Concerning that, you have Rabbi Shimon saying Potter and Rabbi Yehuda saying Chayev. But if the act is destructive in nature, without any constructive aspect to it, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that that is not considered a Shabbos violation. My kaharorin hatluyin besayro. The Mishnah mentioned that Hilchus Shabbos are like mountains suspended by a hair. Now that expression implies that there's a little bit of a hint in the scriptures to teach this. And we said that the Mishnah's reference to Hilchus Shabbos was this very case of Rabbi Abba. Of Chofer Guma, B'Shabbos, and Tzorch Lefo. So where is there a scriptural reference to this? The Gemara answers, and we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Meleches Machsheves Osra Torah, or Meleches Machsheves Lo Ksiva. This is a rather vague line. Without Rashi, it will be very hard to understand it. So we look at Rashi at the top. Meleches machsheves sheha machshava choshva bedaito v'niskaving la. That has to do with a planned activity, a planned intentional activity. V'zeh lo niskaving la lebinyan zeh. The person who was digging the pit for the dirt content, he didn't have a plan for construction. Lefikach Potter, therefore he is exempt. Vizel remez muat. And the following is the slight hint to this idea. Deilu meleches machsheves b'shabes lo ksiva, elo b'mishkan hu dichtiv. This concept of planned, intentional activity is not stated in the context of Shabbos. It is stated in the context of the construction of the Mishkan. This term, Meleches Machsheves, you find in the Torah in the context of the Mishkan. Mishkan, in the Torah at the end, toward the end of the book of Exodus, at the end of Sefer Shmos in Parshas Vayakel. So the Torah speaks about the construction of the Mishkan, and in the same context, the next to that portion of the Torah is are verses dealing with the observance of Shabbos. So because of proximity, because of the smichus of the topics of Shabbos to the Mishkan, they're placed next to each other. We then say that the concepts that you find in the Mishkan have application to Shabbos as well. And that's manifest here in the context, or in the case of Meleches Machsheves, planned, deliberate, intentional activities as they apply to the construction of the Mishkan. They apply to Shabbos as well, as we saw in the case of the digging of the pit, where that intentional act of construction was lacking because he was digging the pit for the dirt content and not for the pit as a part of construction. The Gemara continues, Chagigois. On the side, we have a topic heading, and the point here is Laharos, the Hamoker Lechagigois. We're going to show that the source for Chagigos Havika Roran Tluyan Beser is like mountains suspended by a hair. So the Gemara asks, as we saw before, regarding Shabbos, Michtav Ksivan. There are psukim that refer to the bringing of the holiday Chagiga or Korban. We saw the Chagosim Oisoi in our previous year. The Gemara says, Lo Tzricha, the point of Chagigois being compared to hair to mountains suspended by hair is needed for Lichdomer Le Rav Popo Labaye. It's needed for that which Rav Popo said to Abaye. Note, by the way, we have a very long marking, a long answer. We're here, as we saw in our Nosei heading, we're here to explain what is it about Chagigos that we say is like a mountain suspended by a hair. The Gemara, marking-wise, is characterized by a series of triangles. And on the side, under the Mivneh heading, we feature the triangle and we indicate Shlavim. These are stages. Bechizuk Rav Popa, to strengthen Rav Popa's point or position, Shesover Delamros Shekosu V'chagoysem Oysei Chag L'Hashem Ein Zu Hoychocho Demedubar B'mitzvahs Korban Chagiga. Even though we have a pasuk, as the Gemara indicated in its question, what do you mean that Chagigos have practically no psukim, when it seems that there is a explicit reference to Chagigos? Rav Popa's job in this Gemara is to show that that pasuk could very well be understood to refer to something else. And if we're successful, then we're then explaining why the Mishnah said that Chagigos has very little to depend upon scripturally. So now we continue with the Gemara. After the Gemara asked the question of Michtav Tzifan, we say Lo Tzricha, that no, rather that which the Mishnah says that it's like mountains suspended by hair is Lichid Omar Le Rav Papa Labai, like Rav Papa said to Abaye. Who says that that pasuk is a reference to the slaughtering of sacrifices? Dilma, and the triangles highlight the alternative way to deal with the pasuk. Dilma chogu chago komarachmona. Maybe all the Torah is saying that you should have a lot of joy on the holiday, but not a reference to specific holiday sacrifices. The Gemara asks, well, if that were the intention, Elo Me'ato, if that were the case, Dichtiv V'yichogu Li Bamidbar, Hochi Nami D'chogu Chago Hu. When the topic of the exodus from Mitzrayim rose, the Almighty had spoken about the Jewish people leaving Egypt and then, we'll say, celebrating to me in the desert. So this pasuk v'yachogu libamidbar. If you're going to accept what Rav Papa says that v'chagosim sechag l'Hashem is to have a lot of simcha, so hachi nami in this pasuk v'yachogu libamidbar hachi nami dechogu chagahu, is that a reference to having a great deal of festivity? V'chiteima hachi nami, and if you say yes, that's right, it means having a lot of festivity. V'oksiv. But it says, regarding the same topic of the Exodus, it says, "Vayomer Moshe gam ato titein biodenu zvochim v'oilois." When Moshe Rabbeinu communicates to Paro the will of Hashem to have the Jewish people sent out to be freed from Mitzrayim, Moshe says that you too will give to us zvochim v'oilois, which indicates something that's of a specific sacrificial nature. And not like Rav Papa was suggesting. The Gemara says, no, not so. Dilma hachi kama rachmona. Maybe what the Torah is saying is ichlu vishtu v'chogu chago kamoi. Eat and drink and have a lot of festivity. And the word zvochim in the pasuk is a reference to slaughtering of meat, but not in the context of sacrifices. So that this reinstates Rav Papa's suggestion. Yuma says, no, lo salka daitoch. You can't think that that's what the meaning is. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, velo yolin chelev chagi ad boiker. You see here the word chagi, the central word that we are trying to interpret throughout this discussion. And you see the word chagi, and it says in this pasuk, do not leave the chelev, the forbidden fats of the chagi, until the morning. V'yisalka daitav dechogu chagahu, if you're going to take the word chag to mean something of a festivity, tarbo lechaga yislay, does festivity have along with it forbidden fats? What's the connection? So that at this point, we are challenging Rav Papa by saying that when you see the word chaga, it must be a reference to sacrifices, and sacrifices do have forbidden fats to them that must be offered on the altar. So Rav Papa will respond, "V'dilma hachi karma rachmana." Maybe this pasuk of "V'lo yolin chelev chagi ad boker" means as follows: Chelev habo bizman chag. Lo Yolin, that if you, on a holiday, while you are in fact rejoicing, and Chag then does mean extensive rejoicing, but and during that rejoicing you might offer sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash. At that time you'll offer your personal offerings during the Chol HaMoed period. Be careful not to leave the Chelev over until the morning. Make sure that you have it burnt on the Mizbeach in the over the course of the night. Elo me'ato. Well, if that's going to be your understanding, are you then going to tell me that Haba Bizman Chag Hu Delo Yolin, only sacrifices that one brings during the holiday, there you shall not leave over the sacrificial parts over till the morning? Ha dechol hashana kula yolin, but sacrifices brought throughout the year, you can leave them unoffered, can leave them over till the morning. Kol halayla ad haboker k'siv, regarding sacrifices throughout the year, you have this Torah insistence that they are to be burnt throughout the night after they were slaughtered and offered, and the burning shall continue throughout the night until the morning. Don't leave them over unoffered till the next morning. So you see that applies throughout the year. So that to understand, as Rav Papa suggested in the last triangle, that it's that the chelev that it comes as part of sacrifices that one brings during the holidays while he's rejoicing, that's an untenable explanation. The Gemara says, not so. Dilma, maybe as follows. Imeahu, had I had just one source, Havi Amin, one source for the prohibition of leaving fats of the sacrifices, the forbidden fats of the sacrifices. Had I had just one source, email Havi Amino Hahu La'ase. That is a positive command. In other words, if I had just the poskin, Vayikra posuk vav, perek vav, kol alayla boker, that you shall offer it through the night, that shows me there's a positive command in diligently burning the fats throughout the night. Kosav rachmono hai lelav. Therefore, I have the posuk of velo yolin to tell me that there's a negative command associated with it as well. That if one leaves them over, not only has he violated the positive command, but he's also in violation of this additional sin of the lo yolin chelev hagiyad boker. The Gemara says if that's what the purpose is, just to show me a negative command, lelav kosav rachmona kosav kro achrina. As far as a negative command, there's another posuk for that. The lo yolin min haboser asher tizbach boerev biyom horishon laboker. So I have an alternative pasuk for negative command. Therefore, we're reinstating the problem of Rav Papa's understanding of the pasuk of a lo yolin as being there for simply to tell me a negative command. The Gemara says v'dilma, not so. Maybe as Rav Papa suggested that. Basically, chag, when you see chag, it means additional rejoicing. It's not a reference to the korban chagiga of the holiday. And as far as these psukim concerning the forbidden fats, these psukim are referring to or adding, we'll say, negative commands. V'dilmo lav or lov b'shnei lavin v'aseh. The true, you have the pasuk in Dvarim Perek Tezayin v'loyolin min haboser asher tizbach. We also have v'loyolin chelev chagiyat boker. You'll be in violation of two negative commands. But as far as the explanation of the word chag, that is a reference to extensive joy and rejoicing on a holiday, but not a reference to a korban chagiga. So, where would I know that there is a korban chagiga? Elo asyo midbar midbar, through a gezera shava. Ksiv hocha v'yichogu li b'midbar. Uksiv hosam hazvachim u'mincho igashtem li b'midbar. Ma lahalon, just like in that posuk from Amos, which is in the prophets. The posuk in Amos is zvachim, is a reference to actual sacrifices. Af kan zvachim. So too, the posuk of v'yochogu li b'midbar is a reference to actual sacrifices. So now we know that v'yochogu li b'midbar, the word chag, through the gezera shava, I can determine that it's a reference to actual sacrifices. The Gemara says, well, now that I have this gezera shava, and I can understand that chag, back to the original pasuk, v'chagoyis moyser chag l'Hashem, will also mean the korban chagiga. Umay karor anatulim b'sayra. What do you mean then by describing chagigos as mountains suspended by a hair, indicating there's practically no scriptural reference when you have a gezera shava? A gezera shava is a very strong scriptural source for things that you are trying to determine. And here we've got one. The Gemara says the weakness over here, and hence the reference to this topic as mountains suspended by a hair, is divrei Torah medivrei Kabbalah lo yalfinan. We made a gzera shava, however, it was between psukim in two different types of literature. We have divrei Torah, that's the posuk v'yachogu li b'midbar, posuk in the actual five books of Moses, in this case in Parshas and Sefer Shmois. And we're trying to illuminate it or explain it through a gzera shava from the book of prophets, from Amos. That does not constitute a true gzera shava. And that's this term, divrei Torah, words of Torah, from the words of the prophets, Divrei Kabbalah means words of the prophets, lo yalfinu, we don't learn that. And therefore we call this the identity of Korban Chagiga as merely, there's only a hint to it, but it's not an actual scriptural reference. Me'ilos, the prohibition of using for personal purposes items that were sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara, the Mishnah has said that these two are like mountains suspended by a hair, meaning there's practically no scriptural reference to this violation. The Gemara asks, Michtav Ksivan, there are psukim that speak about the prohibition of mi'ilah. So how can you describe it as something that has very little scriptural reference? Omar Romi Bar Chamo. Now, before we go on, we encounter a new geometric shape on the side under our Nosei Mivneh heading. You can see the diamond is features. These are nisyonos. These are attempts lahasbir to explain lama kotani demilos karantulim besayar. Why do you describe mi'ilah as mountains suspended by a hair? Me'achar shenichtav mi'ilah b'Torah, when you have psukim in the Torah that speak about this prohibition. So we have to, these are attempts to explain why the Mishnah calls, or what aspect of milos is called haron tulim b'seyar. The Gemara, after each diamond appears, a few lines afterwards, you'll find a double underline. And that double underline represents, introduces the rejection of whatever was said till that point. So we continue. Omar Romi Bar Chama, Lo Nitzrucha Elo, the description of the Mishnah concerning Milos as mountains suspended by hair, meaning very little scriptural reference, L'chidetanan, for it is with reference to the following Tanaic source. Hashaliach, a person is sent as an agent. So a person has some holy fun, some hektish in his house, and he takes the money, gives it to an agent, and says, "Go buy with this money, buy for me a red shirt." And then that's of course misuse of hektish funds. And the emes, the agent, goes and does the will of the balabayas. So the Tanaic source will tell us that since the shliach functioned according to the instructions he received, the violation of using these, of the misuse of these funds, is attributed to the original owner, not the agent. However, if the agent doesn't fulfill the teaching or the instruction of the balabayas, the owner, so then the agent is considered having violated mi'ilah, the misuse of the sanctified funds. The Gemara. Now, so we're saying that the Mishnah's reference to mi'ilah as being karon tulim b'seyar is for the following: hashaliach she'osa shlichuso, an agent that does what he was instructed to do, balabayas mo'al. So the original owner is in violation of mi'ilah. Lo asa shlichus, so if the shaliach, the agent, did not carry out his instructions, shaliach mo'al, then he, the agent himself, is considered the violator of the hektish funds, and he is in violation of this sin called mi'ilah. V'chi asa shlichuso amai mo'al, when he does carry out the instruction of the original owner, why do we say the original owner is guilty? Can it be that the agent does the sin? He takes the money and gives it to a storekeeper. He's removing the funds from their sanctification, from their source of, from their original location of sanctity, and transferring it to the possession of a store owner. So that's the sin of transfer of funds. The zem is chayev, and the original owner is guilty. If A does a sinful act, why does B become the violator? And yet, that's what we say. Hainu, Keharorin Hatluyin Basaira. This is what we mean when we say that the topic of Me'ilah is like a mountain suspended by a hair. There's very little scriptural basis for this phenomenon. Whereas in any other area of halacha, we would say, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. There's no agency with regard to sins, action of A reflecting on B. And yet in this case, in the realm of Me'ilah, we say that very thing. Omar Rava Umay Kusha. Rava says, what's the big deal? What's the problem in this? In other words, what is so unique over here about Me'ilah versus other areas? Dilma, shiny Me'ilah. Maybe Me'ilah is different. The Alpha Chait Chait Mitruma. We have a Gzerah Shava. And once you have a Gzerah Shava, that means you have a very strong scriptural reference to this very phenomenon. We have the word chait appearing in the context of Me'ilah and in the case of produce tithing, the truma tithe. And from in the realm of truma, we have a source for agency. Ma hosam shlucho shalom kamo. So just like there in truma, if I instruct someone to tithe my produce, it's considered, his action of tithing is effective. It's considered as if I tithed it. Af kan shlucho shalom kamo. So too in the case of Me'ilah, the agent of the person is like the person himself. So as far as what Romi Bar Chama says is an aspect of Me'ilah worthy of calling or describing it as a mountain suspended by a hair, meaning no scriptural reference, not so. There is a scriptural reference. It's a Gzeirah Shava that serves as the basis of this halacha. Elo Omar Rava, lo nitzrucha, elo lichadisanya. The description of Me'ilah as being like a mountain suspended by a hair, meaning there's no scriptural reference, is for the following aspect. Nizkar balabayas velo nizkar shaliach. We described before an owner taking some holy funds and saying to an agent, buy for me a red shirt with these funds. And at the time of the original instruction, the owner didn't know, he forgot that those were holy funds. But now, after he gave the money to the agent, he remembers those are holy funds. And he's already, the shliach, the emissary, the agent is already at a distance, and he's not aware of that. Shliach mo'al. The shliach is very simply because of his ignorance of the identity of the funds, that's reason for his being moyal. In other words, where there is a known violation of the funds, that's not called Me'ilah. It's called a sin, but it's not categorized as Me'ilah. We didn't explain earlier, but when Me'ilah is violated, there's the need for bringing a sacrifice and, of course, of replenishing the funds. But all of that is when there is no knowledge. But if there is knowledge that the holy funds have been misused, so there is no sacrifice that is brought to atone. So in this case, we have the original owner becoming aware after the agent was on his way. The agent remains unaware. So when those funds are spent for the non-sanctified purpose, the shliach is guilty. Shliach anyo amai ka'ovid. What did this poor shliach, this poor agent do? And yet he's guilty. Hainu karorim atluyin basaira. This is what we mean when we say that this aspect of Me'ilah is like a mountain suspended by a hair, where you have someone who is so innocent, so to speak, so ignorant, and yet he's considered the violator. Omar Rav Ashi. My kusha, once again, Rav Ashi, he dismisses this as being the illustration of the Mishnah. He says, my kusha, what is so unusual about this? Dilma midi dahavi amotzi mois hegdish lechulin. maybe this, the shliach's violation, is similar to all cases of misappropriation of sanctified funds. Let's take a look at Rashi. Midi dahave, ashar, similar to all cases, ashar kol motzi mois hektish v'chulin b'shogeg. Anyone who spends sanctified funds unwittingly, shimalu, they are guilty of me'ilo. Avzeh b'shogeg kotzion. So to the agent over here, he paid the store owner unwittingly. Since the original sender, the original owner, canceled the shlichus by when at the point that the original owner became aware or reminded himself that those were holy funds, he voids the agency. So this agent is no longer functioning as an agent. So therefore, he's functioning on his own, and as such, he is like anyone else that takes holy funds unwittingly and spends them for personal purposes. And that's the classic case of Mila. There's nothing unusual about this. Elo Omar Ravashi. Lo Nitzrcha Elo. The Mishnah's description of Mi'ila as being something that has no scriptural basis. Lichadisnan. For the following. Notal Evan Okoro Shel Hegdish. Hareze Lo Mo'ala. Person, and we're going to see further explanation of this later in the Gemara, but in the meantime, we're just going to keep to a very simple translation. A person takes a stone or a beam that was sanctified to the holy temple. So he took it, that's not considered an act of mi'ila. Nosno l'chavero, if he then gives it to someone else, hu mo'al v'chavero lo mo'al. The person who originally took it, by his giving it to someone else, he's thereby transferring it from the possession of hektish to mundane matters. So because you are the one that took it from hektish and now giving it out to someone else, you're moel, the receiver is not moel. We ask, michti, mishkal shokla, mali hu, umali chavero. You have someone taking something that's holy. And we're saying here that you are moel and your friend is not. But in the end of the day, something is being taken away from hektish. Why is there any distinction between you and your friend? Well, hainu karo matulim b'saro. This is what we mean when we say it's like a... like the rules of Mila are like mountains suspended by a hair. Very little to base this halacha on. The Gemara rejects this. Umay kushya Dilma Kedishmuel. Maybe the source is to be understood like Shmuel understands it. And with Shmuel's understanding, we're then going to see a clear distinction between the original person and the receiver. Hocha, we continue at the top of Yud Aleph, Omen Aleph, Begizbar, Hamasuros Lo Avnei Binyan Askinan. This fellow who took the stone or beam of Hegdish is in fact the temple treasurer. He is, we'll say, these the arm of the Beis HaMikdash. It was these building materials were given, these holy building materials were given to him to supervise. The Cholhecho de Mancho, wherever they are lying, they're considered in his domain. And his, as we said, he's the long arm of the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, when he took it, it's considered still in the realm of the Beis HaMikdash. There's no violation. However, when he gives it to someone else, at that point, he's transferring it from the realm of the Mikdash, of holiness, to the mundane. Rashi at the top, the Cholhecho de Mancha, filu Mekami Hochi, Bishusei Mancha. Even before he gave it over to someone else, it's still considered in the Gizbar's domain. Hilka Kokamo Tshinot La, as long as he took it, Lo Shanyo Midi, the Tepuk Miyod de Hektish. He didn't create any change in status that it should leave his possession, or leave the hand, the possession of Hegdish. It's only when he gave it over to the friend, to the outsider, that you have an act of removal from sanctity to the mundane, and that's where the Me'ilah took place, and that's why he is Moel. The receiver is not Moel. He didn't do anything wrong. Elo Misefa. So rather, we seek a illustration of the rule of the Mishnah from the Sefer, from the end of that source. Bono besoch beso hareze lo moal ad shi yodur tachteo beshove pruta. If the beam of Hegdish was built into someone's house, so the building of the beam into the house does not constitute mi'ilah. When is mi'ilah violated? It's as it is when he dwells under there enough time that the value of the dwelling is worth a pruta. In other words, the act of building the beam into the house does not constitute an act of mi'ilah. However, when this fellow lives under the beam, enjoys the beam as part of his house, then if he lived there a few minutes, that if you were to, let's say, rent the room, you would have to pay a shove pruta in value for a few minutes of dwelling. At that point, he's in violation of mi'ilah. And this is something that we're just saying is like mountains, as the Gemara explains, michti shinuye shanya. After all, this fellow who received the hektish beam, when he built it into his house, he changed its original form. He had to sand it down, he had to determine its proper positioning and change its shape in order to achieve that. That's shinui. You changed the original beam. The original beam was sanctified, and now you've changed it. Mali dor, mali lo dor. What difference does it make whether he dwelled under it or even if he didn't dwell under it? The fact that he changed it, that would be mi'ilah. That's the misuse in a very physical form of something sanctified. The Gemara says, you're right, hainu karo matzluim basaro. This is what we meant when we said that you have a halacha concerning mi'ilah that makes a distinction between building it into the house versus dwelling under it. And that's something that there is no scriptural basis. Mar says, "Umay kusha, why does this pose something that's, we'll say, based on simple oral tradition and not based on logic? Dilma lechidarav. Maybe the understanding of this is like Rav says. The Omer Rav kigon shinicha piaruba. We spoke about the beam being built into his house." But it's not like we said that he had to sand it down and reshape it in order to affix it into the structure. No! He took the original beam as it is and placed it over an aruba, over an opening. An aruba is a skylight or an opening. So the beam was placed as is without it being reformed, refashioned. Idor bay in, if he dwells under it and derives personal benefit from this sanctified beam, that's considered an act of mila for lo dor bay lo, if he doesn't dwell under it. So the beam hasn't undergone any change. And as a result, there would be no mila if he didn't dwell under it. So that's a logical point. We wouldn't have to describe that as something that's dependent purely on some type of oral tradition having no scriptural basis. So where does the Mishnah's description of Mi'ilos as mountains suspended by a hair come into play? Eloli Oilom Kidarova. Rather, we're going to go back to Rava's suggestion, where he spoke about an agent sent by a balabayas, by an owner, taking with him holy funds. And the original owner remembered before the agent, while the agent was en route, the original owner remembered that they were holy funds. The agent did not. We said that the original owner is not Moel, but the agent is. Udekokashyoloch, and then you asked, why is that classified as something unusual that you need an oral tradition to be its basis? when midi dehape amotzi mols hegdish lechulin, when it's a simple case of anyone taking holy funds and using them for mundane purposes, which is the standard case of mi'ilah. The Gemara says this is different. Hosam meida yoda de'iko zuzi de'hegdish. In a person himself unwittingly taking holy funds, but he knew that there were holy funds there originally. Maybe he didn't realize that these were the holy funds, but he knew that they were there. He should have been more scrupulous in his behavior when taking the money to buy whatever he wanted to buy. But however, here in the case of the agent, he didn't sanctify anything to begin with. He was receiving money from someone else to go buy the red shirt. Did the agent know? Did he ever know that there were holy funds there? He never knew. There wasn't any expectation of the agent having to check things out carefully. And that's what we mean. Therefore, it's regarding that case of Nizkar Balabais for Nizkar Shliach that the Shliach is mol Hainu Karorim Atluyim Basairo. It's this that we describe as mountains suspended by hair. And Rashi says on the first narrow line, Hainu Karorim Atluyim Basairo, Besmicha Mu'etes, through very slight reliance, Midaminon law, we compare it, Lemotzi Moz Hegdish Lechulin. Shari Korov Hu La'oines Yoiser Minashogeg. It's a case of someone that's almost, it's almost a case of ones, something that's beyond someone's control, more than a case of something that's simple shogig, unwitting. And yet, we say that the shliach is moyel, and that's what the Mishnah intended when it described mi'ilos as being karoron atluyim b'sayro. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to receive information regarding marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.